You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors and senior issues. I'm Joanne Rideout, your host. I'm here in the studio with my two co-hosts, Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. We come to you every month to talk about these kinds of issues. Hi, you guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be talking about a topic that's of importance to people at any age, but we're going to be talking about it in the realm of elder issues, and that's communication skills. All of us are always seeking to communicate well with each other. When people get older, sometimes those communication issues can become more pronounced or manifest in a different way, and so family members and other people in that caregiving role are sometimes a little bit stymied as to how best to communicate. And sometimes communication can be frustrating on both sides. So today we're going to be talking about some of those things. And why don't we start out talking about what are some of the issues that could cause a person to be difficult to communicate with?
So things like hearing loss, memory loss, dementia. If they've had a medical condition like a stroke that's caused aphasia where they can't speak and sometimes can't understand what's being said. It can different blockades to communicating the way we're used to, and so you just need to be kind of aware of what their limitations are and adjust yourself to those limitations when we're speaking with somebody.
Well, then let's talk a little bit about how do you communicate with someone who may not be able to hear you well, may not necessarily understand what you're saying, and may be in a different place than you think they are.
A lot of times it's people that are hard of hearing, for whatever reason, they won't use their aids, they won't use different things like that, but they get very adept at like reading lips, facial expressions. There have been situations in families where the husband, for example, would end up shaving off a beard that he's had for a long time, because then his lips are more noticeable as his wife is trying to understand what he's saying. So, and a lot of it has to do with facial expressions, picking up hints, talking to someone in maybe increased volume, but when you do that, watch the tone, because a lot of times we equate loud with shouting and yelling. And so it's, but you can speak loudly without, you know, speaking angrily. And so the tone, the facial expressions, picking up cues and hints, for example, and asking someone, do you want a cup of coffee, as opposed to picking up the coffee pot and saying, would you like some coffee? Those type of clues and hints, they're very helpful.
Well, I do have a little, I mean, I think, you know, I think it's important for people to have sympathy for people on both sides of this equation, because I sort of know what it's like to be the person who has said something for the millionth time and isn't heard, or whatever the issue is. So I think, you know, I think it is important to remember that when you raise your voice, it's how you raise your voice that really matters. Because by the time you get to the point of raising your voice, you may be really raising your voice when you really didn't really intend that to be. So I think that's all part of the whole communication thing.
One of the common things is for frequency. So women's voices quite often will be too high pitch, and they need to lower their pitch. So it's perfectly okay to ask the person how they hear best, you know. So especially I think women have to watch that, because you get that little high squeaky pitch, sometimes they're just not going to pick it up. But if you learn, oh, I lower my voice, I talk slowly, I talk directly, I get face to face with a person, and I turn off the background noise, I turn off TVs and radios, and then you're more likely to be heard.
Sometimes, too, there's a tendency, even among professionals. I know a person that went to a doctor, and this woman was hard of hearing. And she was really angry when she came out. She said, I finally had to tell the doctor, I'm hard of hearing, I'm not stupid. Because the doctor began to talk to her in a condescending way as he got louder and in very simple words, kind of childish words. So it's really important to watch your mannerisms, watch your expressions, like Michelle said, your volume. All of that will give cues. And some people, even if, like I said, hearing aids will improve, for whatever reason, they won't use them. So it takes some adaptation between both parties to sort of figure out how to make that work.
Well, I think that from talking with people that I know who have hearing aids, the way they hear with the hearing aids is different from the way they hear naturally, and so they and it isn't necessarily very pleasing for them. So they may not want to wear them because it's not. It just reminds them of how they can't really hear,
right,
hearing in this
right.
kind of odd way. But they, at least they can hear a little bit better. But so when people when you're dealing with someone who is, I mean, their hearing loss is one thing, and you can have a person who's completely lucid who just can't hear well, and that's one thing. But then you could have a person who really does have dementia and isn't processing things in the same way as the person they're talking with. So what are some tips about how to talk to a person who is maybe at any given moment just not quite where you think they are?
Yeah, so one of the things you want to do is make sure that they understand that who you are when you approach. So just, don't just make the assumption that, you know, you're her daughter and you're gonna, you know, she's going to know who you are. I always consider it a courtesy, even with my own family with dementia, that I will walk in and introduce myself. Not just, you know, just say, hi, Grandma, this is Shelley. Shelley's here to visit. but just use my name when I'm there. Using a name tag isn't a bad thing either, even if you do know the person very well. Writing your name in big letters on one of those little sticky, cheap, name tags on your... helps remind them along the way, especially if they can still read. You want to help keep them as much on track as possible, but remembering that if they do get off track and they go on their own discussion, and no matter what the information is they're giving to you, you go there too. There's just no reason on earth to argue with a person with dementia. Just enjoy the conversation wherever they want it to go.
And I think it's important too to address the person by name. And no surprises, you know, don't come up behind them and hug them, you know, come in and face to face, you know, hi Linda, how are you, it's good to see you again, that type of thing, because it sort of helps them get oriented too. And I think the biggest gripe, I guess, for me is when people will sort of escalate into arguments by trying to orient someone who can't be oriented. You know, if they have dementia, Alzheimer's, and you're feeling like, well, you should know this, maybe, but they don't. And especially with families, it's very difficult because you're dealing with denial, you're dealing with fear, you're dealing with, I don't want this to be happening to mom or dad. Mom, you know, you do remember. Well, no, maybe not. And so it's hard not to do that. Also, it's hard not to get frustrated when you're asked the same thing maybe five times in a half hour. Well, I already told you is kind of the natural response. Instead of just answering the question, they ask the question again, you answer it the same. Not escalating your voice, but you just answer it like it's the first time they asked them. And you know, you got to, as Michelle said, you got to kind of go where they are sometimes. And it's really important to listen. And again, the facial expressions, you know, this person may have dementia, but they know if you've got your arms crossed and you're kind of stomping your foot and waiting for your turn because you know, you're communicating while you're just rattling on. They get that, and they can sense, you know, that you're frustrated. And so avoid those sort of frustrating traps. If I'm trying to get you oriented and say, no, you need to know this, don't you remember so-and-so died, da-da-da-da-da-da, I'm getting frustrated, you're getting frustrated, and pretty soon there's no communication going on. So it's very difficult, but... it's necessary. And the short, concise sentences rather than the rambling sentences like I'm doing now.
There are some tools that are useful too that a person can help with a conversation. So for instance, if your loved one's in a nursing home or in assisted living and they're getting people coming in and out of their area, having like a storyboard in the room that has some interesting things about their family with little labels on them saying their names or when this was. So it's a point that they can come in and say, oh, that must be your daughter. Oh, that must be your son. Oh, yeah, I've seen him here before. And you know, they could start a conversation easily. At home, it could be an album on a coffee table with, again, labeled with names and some information about it. So people can have that conversation. I think friends and family tend to back off with people with dementia because they don't know if they can talk to them, if they can communicate with them, or what they'll talk about when they come visit. And so if you give them some tools to use when they're there to visit, I think that can be really helpful. I had I had a volunteer that was going out to be as a friendly visitor for a while, and she gave me a really nice hint of using a visitor's bag. And so she would bring a bag everywhere she went. She went to several different homes to visit seniors with dementia, and she would bring the same bag all the time, and in it she'd have little things like a certain kind of treat that she knew the person liked and it was okay for them to have, a little purse-sized picture album with her own family pictures in it that she could go through and talk about, little books or magazines. Maybe she'd be reading a story to somebody and she'd have that with them. But just things that she can pull out. Sometimes it was as much as, depending on the person's level, you know, it'd be a stuffed animal that made cute little noises or something. But just something as a possible distraction, too, if things escalate, that she could easily pull out of that visitor's bag and she could change the subject with. And she said that over time she felt that even if the person didn't remember her, they started remembering her bag. And so it was just another way of creating that memory with the person. So they'd see her in that bag coming, and they'd kind of remember something about them, know that that was a friendly face that had come by before. And that was just an excellent, excellent suggestion to have that. So preparing yourself before you go. We used to even talk about when you do visit with somebody, it's helpful sometimes to walk out and take a few notes. Just remind yourself of things that they enjoyed talking about, or things about their family that they really want, they like to go there with, they like to enjoy, or if they like the special kind of activity or treat or whatever, that you can remember to bring it with you next time.
Well, so it sounds like, you know, this whole undertaking of, you know, if you realize that there's someone in your family or someone who you are interacting with on a regular basis is having trouble with communication, you're having trouble communicating with them, that you can take kind of an active role in that communication where you're not just being, not just reacting to them, to whatever right. they're doing, you're sort of taking an active role in attempting to communicate with them, which sounds like a great way to sort of reduce your own frustration with mm-hmm. How you're approaching. Because, you know, communication is, you know, it's a source of humor. If you look at most, you know, a lot of jokes are about how people can't communicate or don't communicate mm-hmm. or don't hear each other or something. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for people in this role of a family member to kind of, you know, really think about what they're doing.
Yeah, you have pleasant smelling lotion that you can kind of rub on their hands. So you got a little bit of touch going on, just rubbing their hands and talking to them. I just sometimes go up, and that's the day the family member does their fingernails. It helps file their fingernails, and so they're talking and doing something and having a touching time that way. Can be a good tool. So think about your tools before you go in. Be prepared before you go in, and I think it'd be less frustrating for everybody.
And one of the mainstays of that, and Michelle mentioned it, is some of the things in that bag are photo albums, and they're familiar. You know, they're usually, especially not so much maybe with the boomers and forward, but with the elders, a lot of times their photo albums are pretty comprehensive.
I mean, yeah.
You know, back to, this is when they first invented the camera, and here's a picture of him, of, you know, great-grandpa in the Civil War. And you know, I mean, they have all these pictures, and it's very familiar to them. Even the outside of it's very familiar to them. And a lot of times if there's a stressful situation, it's recommended that, oh, is that a picture album? You know, and that'll start that. And it's familiar, and they can look at it. It de-stresses them, gives you some insight to how they're feeling, and those type of things. If people are getting frustrated, you know, go to the picture album or just do a different activity. You know, let's do this. Again, open-ended questions for people with dementia, not so good. What do you want to do now? That's confusing. That's confusing to me sometimes mm-hmm. when someone asks me, yeah. what do you want to do now? You know, say, let's look at this puzzle you were working on, or let's go for a walk or something like that. Make those type of suggestions and get them out of that sort of stressful situation, because that doesn't do anyone any good if they're stressed out.
Yeah, and also, you know, even though you may be enjoying your conversation and things are going well, that person may get tired quickly. And so be aware that if the person's starting to tire out, it's also a time that, you know, escalated behaviors could happen. And it's just putting a lot of extra stress on it. So they may want to make a habit of making, you know, several short visits rather than long visits. Also, the number of children and family members that are in a room some people tolerate that differently. Some people can take having two or three kids running around making noise, and some really can't. And so being very cautious and aware of the person, how they're responding to that. Some people just like to sit back and watch children play, you know, not really interact as much, but just watch. And so that could be a wonderful day out, to just go watch children in the park play. But some people aren't going to react to that well at all. So just learning what that person can and can't, what they're comfortable with. And that takes some, you know, being sensitive to their situation to do that.
I'd like to key off on that by talking about listening. You know, it's instead of waiting for our turn to talk, really listening and giving people time to process or to talk what they're, you know, say whatever they want to say and listen to what they're talking about, and be okay with silence. If they just want to think for a while, if they're just reminiscing, sometimes people get, you know, what are you thinking about? What's going on? You know, let's do this. Let's do this. Well, sometimes all of us like to just have some quiet time, even around people, but we just want to think and want to reminisce. And it's difficult because family members especially are concerned. They love this person. They're concerned about them. You know, why are you so quiet? You know, what's going on? Let's go do something. And sometimes it is. Sometimes they're tired, like Michelle said. And they're just maybe thinking at some level, why doesn't this person just leave so I can rest? But this person is involved in keeping them active and keeping them alert. And so Pick up on the cues, watch what's going on, try to hear, not only listen to what they're saying, but try to hear what they're saying.
You know, another thing I think that sometimes family members do is they'll think that the answer to the problem is an outing. You know, the answer to the problem is to go someplace new. And that can just escalate situation more. If the person really is kind of not wanting to go there, you're having to force them out the door to go on an outing, that may not be the right thing to do. They may not feel comfortable in a new environment. And as any kind of dementia goes on further, their world kind of pulls in on them. And so they feel safer in their closer surroundings. And we're coming in from the outside all excited and all hyped about being outside. And to them, that's what it's going to feel like, no matter how low you are. They're going to feel like you're really hyped when you walk in. So you really have to get to their level and kind of calm down, slow things down, and really be in tune with that person. So leave any feelings of being hurried behind. If you were hurried to get there quickly to see them, or you were hurried, ready to get to the doctor, and you got them out on a trip, you've got to slow down. It's all in the communication is all in your hands. What goes right because you handled it right. You planned for it. You got yourself in the right position to talk to the person. And you had a plan B. If something didn't go right, something went wrong, you would be able to pull out plan B and divert the situation so it didn't escalate any further. So you've got your thinking to do. It's all in your hands. You've got the power to do that.
And some of the best information to come out about communicating, of course, comes from the family members, how they've learned to adapt, how they've learned to pick their battles, how they've learned that I don't have to win the argument. That doesn't even make sense. How I don't have to correct mom or dad or whoever or my spouse, because what does it matter? You know, it's just going to frustrate everybody. And so those type of things of people that are living in that situation on a daily basis really get a lot of beneficial information out there. They're the experts because they're living it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, too, if you let something escalate, if you don't have a plan B and you allow something to escalate, get into that argument, get into that frustration situation, there's also this tendency for some people with dementia to fixate on that situation. It hit an emotional cue in the brain. And, you know, now it's not just in short-term memory and going to go out, and it's going to stay there. it's going to be repeated over and over again. That person, it's a wonderful way the brain works, but I think if you hit that emotional clue where they really got into that battle with them, it's not worth it because you may be hearing about that for a very long time. So really put your thinking cap on.
Well, a little bit before the show, we talked a little bit about difference in styles between generations and how people communicate. So if a young person is trying to communicate with an older person, it's just different. So could we talk a little bit about that? Michelle, you were kind of talking about
that. Oh, yeah, we're just talking about the idea that, you know, the text speak and jargons and acronyms and even the the tone of our voice, how we speak. I think you called it upspeak or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those are things that our senior generation really, they're not familiar with. And so you can quickly lose them in a conversation if you come in with that kind of talk. So again, it's all about getting to where they're at. Doesn't matter where you were at when you walked in. You're there to visit them. You're there to be with them. And so putting yourself in their world sometimes means using some of those good old manners we were taught, you know, saying thank you and please and really focusing on them rather and leave behind all the jargon and all the technical speak that we tend to speak about, and really, you know, talking, having your cell phone out and looking at your cell phone, going through Facebook while you're visiting with grandma, probably not a good thing. They won't know what that is exactly, and it may make them nervous to begin with. And plus, you're not there with them. Be there with them at the time.
You were talking about the upspeak. Excuse me. And we were talking earlier about the tone of your voice. Well, if you're saying, I went to work today, what they're hearing is that tone of voice that says, is that a question I'm supposed to answer in there somewhere? And so that type of thing, or we had mentioned before, you go in and say, hey, grandma, and you say something about hashtag, she's thinking of dinner or something. You know, I used to make hash. You know, it's a whole different scenario. And it's so easy we do it. We're in social work. There's a lot of socialese that goes on back and forth that communicating with one another, use shortcuts and jargon, but people do it generationally too. And so I know sometimes with my youngest son, you know, he'll be talking and I'll say, okay, I have no idea what you're talking about, because all of his peers know, you know, those terms. So, and that's just a little generational hop, not a grandparent or anything. So it is important to be careful of your wording, to be polite. I mean, the age of manners really was in our grandparents' time more so than ours. And they'll appreciate that and respond more to good manners.
Well, I'd like to take a minute and talk about another issue that we discussed briefly before the show, and that's aphasia.
Yeah. It's usually from like a stroke or traumatic brain injury, something like that. It's the inability to express words. You know what you want to say, but you can't get the words out. Or receptive aphasia is, I can get words out, you can talk to me, but I can't process your words.
And sometimes it's combined. You get both. So it's the stroke basically affected that part of the brain for language. And so you have a hard time communicating. So you have to be a little bit more creative with a person like that. Try to understand what they want. And sometimes that takes a professional to help you with it. But typically, you know, it says something like 40% of people who have strokes end up with this aphasia thing going on. And so it could be at different levels. Sometimes it's very mild, but sometimes it's very profound. So that would be another way to talk about. Yeah.
Well, so the tendency in that kind of a situation from someone who didn't understand would probably be to stay away from the person.
That's what people tend to want to do, because it's hard to have a conversation with them.
So then how do you have a conversation with somebody when you don't know whether they really can hear you or process what you're saying? That's pretty intimidating.
You can tell if they can hear you or not and process by their body language, facial expressions. Are they paying attention to you? Are they just sort of, you know, because they're not getting anything? Are they scowling at you? Are they angry and frustrated? And speech therapy sometimes can do great things after a stroke. Sometimes, depending upon the damage that's done, it's not going to accomplish a lot. And depending upon the age of the person and so on. I had a client who was a young, healthy man that out of the blue had a stroke and ended up with expressive aphasia. It was pretty clear that he understood, because he would point to things and do that kind of thing in conversation. And the speech therapy got on early, and he's doing pretty well now. There's a halting in his speech, but he's able to communicate. And the people around him and his family were able to find the patience to let him express himself instead of trying to tell him what he's trying to say, which is very important, because that can be a really long conversation to get one sentence out. But they're relearning, and once they do and they've got that support and they feel that it's okay, people are listening and people are okay with you taking time, then it makes it a lot easier for them also.
So sort of to summarize a little bit of what we've been talking about, it sounds like, you know, when you're going into a conversation, as thinking from the caregiver point of view, if you're going into a conversation with an older person who may have various issues, it sounds like you should really be thinking about it in a different way than you would if you were talking to one of your friends. So I thought it would be good, since we're close to the end of the show, to just summarize for people, you know, what are some of the things you should keep in mind when you go and have a conversation with a person who may have communication issues that are over and above the usual communication issues that we all have? So, Doug, you have a list there of tips.
I do. This is from the Alzheimer's Association, and it's called 10 Quick Tips for Better Communication. Number one, be calm and supportive. Focus on feelings, not on facts. Pay attention to your tone of voice. Address the person by his or her name. Speak slowly, use short, simple words. Ask one question at a time. Avoid vague words and negative statements. Don't talk about the person as if he or she weren't there. Use unspoken communication, like pointing. Be patient, flexible, and understanding.
That sounds like stuff that would be good anytime for anybody.
Manners.
Yes.
Good manners.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's an art. And yeah, communication is an art, and I think we are not as good at that art as we used to be, because we have so many distractions and different ways of communicating now rather than just verbal. But our elders didn't. Our elders talked, they had long conversations about life in general, and they had manners taught about saying please, thank you, introducing yourself appropriately. Those are all things that we can incorporate again and have the joy of using while we're talking to our elders.
Well, so during the show this month, we've been talking about communication skills and ways of communicating between generations, and also ways of communicating with people who may have various health issues that make it hard for them to communicate with you in the same way that they once did. We're at the end of the show. We're going to talk about contact information, as we always do, for both sides of the Columbia River. We have places where you can go to get more information about these issues, whether you are in Oregon or in Washington. So, Michelle, you're with Northwest Senior and Disability Services. That is the Oregon side of the equation. So how can people get a hold of your agency?
Okay, so our warranted office is 503-861-4200, and our website is www.nwsds.org.
Okay, and Doug, how about you? You are Washington State.
Right, and our Long Beach office in South Pacific County is 360-642-3634. Our Raymond office is 360-942-2177, and our website is www.o3a.org.
And if you are a regular listener to the show, you know that we talk about a lot of senior issues. And if you have questions about any of those issues, you can call the numbers here and get more information about almost anything relating to senior issues. So if you have a question, you can call and ask, and they will refer you to people who can help you. You've been listening to A Senior Moment on Coast Community Radio. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening. I've been here in the studio this month with my co-hosts, Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next month on A Senior Moment.